and welcome to Matt Bites, episode 82. I'm Elaine Giles, I'm here with my co-host Mike Thomas. In this episode, stashing data, floating images and noisy tech. Please note, day 3 of Mac Bite 7 and we're still going strong.
It's a miracle.
So, as I was saying, day 3, and we're wrapping up our look at what we used to use and what we've replaced it with. So first, we'll be looking at mobile document access. And as we've mentioned before, good reader. Love it. We mentioned it in terms last time of iAnnotate being a great alternative. And Derek Peters did a review of iAnnotate in show 75. So if you missed that, check it out. Now, both of these apps have undergone complete redesigns, so they're sporting snazzy new iOS 7-esque interfaces. For Goodreader, somewhat overdue. Now, I know previously you said you've been using Goodreader, but what are you using now?
For annotating PDFs, I must admit, I don't do much annotating PDF. I did find iAnnotate synchronising confusing, whether it was synchronising with Dropbox or whether you were downloading a local copy.
I did initially, I agree with you, because I think Goodreader was intended to manage the files. The file management side of it is fantastic. Whereas iAnnotate, I think the strength of it is in the annotations and the file management is just very different. So I work with documents all the time. I've got copious annotations and I actively read rather than passively read. I think if I'm not actively taking notes or making annotations, then has this happened to you? You suddenly stop and realise that you've not been paying attention and have to go back a page or so.
Yeah.
Try and pick it up from where you were. Goodreader's got an awesome set of features. And like I said, I think it goes beyond documents. Now, I know you had a weird use for it, didn't you, before Christmas?
Yeah, I think I mentioned this on one of the previous episodes when my music player stopped working. I was using it to listen to music and listen to audiobooks. My iTunes fiasco. I have used it as a video player. It's pretty much an everything document repository and everything document player, reader, viewer.
Exactly. That's what I think it's really good at. The fatal flaw for me was when I was annotating, I think it had about 180 pages, and I was annotating it and it saved the annotations to the wrong page. And that was when I did move to iAnnotate. So good job Derek pointed me in that direction, because there are so many applications that do a very similar kind of job. But they all do it in a different way, and they all seem to have a different range of tools in terms of what's available for annotation as well. But I'm happy to say iAnnotate, I've stuck with it, and it's been rock solid. But I still do miss an ability that Goodreader had, which is to annotate by drawing a basic shape. So can you imagine you've got a paragraph of text or a diagram in a book that you're working with? I want to be able to just draw a square around it. And iAnnotate forces me to do that in a freehand way. And I don't know about you, but it just looks messy when I do freehand annotations.
It does. I think it looks better with proper circles and squares and stuff rather than freehand.
Yeah, I'm still surprised it's missing, because iAnnotate's got a huge array of tools, and I love the interface to it. I love the fact that you can customise it. It has a toolbar that has all the tools available on it, and you can have a secondary toolbar. You can take tools away if they're stuff that you never use, which you don't often see with iOS apps,
no.
Do you? Much more important with desktop apps. But I appreciate that, because I think it makes it customised to what I want. I might even have different toolbars for different jobs. So I really like that. But I take your point about the syncing. It's conceptually incredibly different. It does actually, if you think about it, it syncs. It really does sync. It doesn't. It's not one of those apps where you've got to pull something down from Dropbox, make your annotations to it, and then upload it to Dropbox with a different name or rename the other one. Do you know what I mean? That kind of manual file management. It really does try and synchronise it. And it synchronises more than just Dropbox as well. I've got mine linked to SkyDrive OneDrive. But it is different from Goodreader, but I'd say it's also different from other alternatives too. Thinking of Documents from Riadl. You use that one?
I had that one on my iPhone, I think, but then when I went through a rationalised... You know how you go through a rationalisation of followers on Twitter and Facebook? Well, I go through a rationalisation of apps on my devices, and I think that one went bye-bye.
Yeah, what you mean is you thought, what's that? I can't remember using it, and you deleted it.
No, I knew what it was.
It's a good app, and it's recently been updated as well. It's still free. So it's from the perspective of managing the documents. What they've done with it is they've given you that side of it for free, but it's got complete integration with other Readle tools. So, you know, the Readle had a PDF annotator as well, didn't they? It integrates really tightly with the other tools. So that provides extra functionality within documents then. I loved the interface. I really did think the interface was fantastic. But the annotation's more important to me, so that's how come I'm still with iAnnotate. But I think all apps like that suffer a limitation, and it's the way that iOS works with data and files, and the fact that they want to be marooned in single apps. Apple don't want it to work any other way. They don't want a central data store. And that brings us on to creating that central data store for yourself with a device rather than relying on passing files between apps in iOS or even relying on a cloud service. And the first of these is AirStash from Maxell, which is like a large pen drive. It charges and transfers data via USB, and it stores its files on an SD card that inserts neatly into the end of the device. I find that it's great for camera transfers and accessing photos from camera cards when you're on the road. And how it actually works, it creates its own wireless network. And you attach your iOS devices to that new wireless network. And that gives you access to the content. Now, the benefit of that is that, you know, I've talked before about my Goodreader library being hundreds of meg or gig. Yes, it's quite large. I think it was over about 30 gig. What I've been able to do with that, because again, it was marooned in Goodreader. And not only was it marooned in Goodreader, but it was per device. So I'd have to try synchronising my iPhone version of Goodreader and my iPad version of Goodreader. So far easier to keep the data completely outside of an app. And that's what I was doing with this. So I found it worked very well. What I've done is I've taken an SD card and I've put about 30 to 40 gigs worth of reference materials on it. And I'm accessing the same set of data from this device across multiple iOS devices. And I found it works really well. Thinking back, I think I bought it when Dad was really ill and I was making many trips to the hospital and working from the car park. A charge lasted pretty much all day as well. The only problem I found with it was when you're attached to the Wi-Fi of this device, so it's like a wireless hard drive, really, you are not connected to any other wireless. So I had my MiFi with me and you could only connect to one or the other. It's around £87, I think, from Amazon, and that includes a 16 gig SD card. So you could actually save quite a bit of money by taking a physical iOS device with a smaller capacity and putting your data on one of these things. Don't know if you've thought of doing that.
I haven't, but it sounds a good idea.
It is a good idea. There's a second device as well, which is a Kingston Mobile Lite. Now, you think looking at them and reading about them that they did the same job, but they are actually slightly different. I find that one can't be beaten when it comes to transferring data from an iOS device, especially photos, but also video and music. To look at it, it's slightly bigger than an AirStash, but it's still very portable. It's about 4.5 inches long and about 2 inches wide. It's very, very light, so you easily would slip into a pocket. Not much bigger in length than a MiFi. And you have this device. It has its own iOS application, and that gives you two functions. The first thing is you've got your device, you charge it up, turn it on. Then you've got the app on your iOS device, and its first job is to set up the device. So it allows you to create a network and secure it and all of that. And that works very well. And the second thing it allows you to do is to manage your files. So it gives you access to the storage on that device. The biggest difference for me was the way that it connected. It did create its own wireless network, so exactly the same as the AirStash. But it also provided a bridge mode to the internet. And that's really convenient because It means I'm connected to the device, but I can carry on using things like browsers and other apps without constantly having to go back to the settings and switch to a different network. So I really appreciated that. Another difference is it's not just an SD card for storage. The device itself has an SD card slot, but it also has a USB port, which means that you can access information from a pen drive or actually any standard hard drive that's got a USB cable. So you could actually back up the whole of a device. You know, if you've been out all day, you've got lots of video on it and you just want to back that video up, you could use it for that, which I appreciate. Do you remember when we went to the beach soccer? Many moons ago, I seem to recall with a PC laptop.
Oh, yes.
And it took me all night to transfer 26 gig of photos.
Mm.
And I actually transferred it to a music device, didn't I? It was all I had with me that
That's
was big
right.
enough. And it did. It took about 5-6 hours. So it's that kind of job that this would do. I didn't want to leave that event with the photos in only one place, which was on my camera card. So for transferring the contents of a camera card to a backup, this thing's amazing. And the third thing it can do, so not only does it give you the ability to bridge to the internet and give you storage on your cards, but it can also act as an emergency charger. So if your phone's getting a bit flat, you can actually plug it into this thing and it will charge it, which I thought was amazing. Now, that's sounding expensive, isn't it?
It is.
Mm.
Go on.
I mean, chargers alone can be sort of £15-20. It's £33 at the moment. That was today's price from
Amazon.
That's
good value.
I actually got it a lot cheaper than that. I think it was about 27 or 28 when I got one.
That's even and better value.
It's an amazing piece of kit for that kind of price. It really is. I wouldn't say, I haven't at the moment. I need to spend more time with it and because it's got this app. Whereas the Air Stash, I have actually done that. That's what I was doing with Goodreader. I was connecting directly to the Air Stash from Goodreader. I haven't had the opportunity to try and connect directly to the mobile light from Goodreader, so I need to test that, whether it can do that or not. But the app itself is more in terms of backup than accessing. I mean, yes, you can open anything from any of the hard drives or the SD cards attached to it, but there doesn't seem an easy way at the moment to transfer that to another app. So you've still got the data islands where things are in a single app or whatever. But you can read stuff, you can get to it. But the thing, the main feature of that is to back up your device or images, videos, music on the road. And for that is an amazing device. Now, you see, you didn't even know about that one, did you?
I didn't, but yeah, I want one.
Yeah, you don't have one? Not
no,
used it?
But I want one.
Oh, but you want one. Yeah, that's my job done, I feel. That's my job and it's done. Anyway, on to another essential for us, screen capture. I was distraught last year. Or was it the year before? When did Evernote break Skitch?
I can't remember.
Yeah, it was quite a while ago, but it broke badly. And that was what made me look round seriously at alternatives. I hadn't realised, to be honest, how much I'd come to rely on Skitch. I do use the standard built-in take a screenshot shortcut keys. But Skitch gave you that opportunity to just stick an arrow on it, put a circle on it and things like that. And then, of course, Evernote bought it and then broke it. So some of the alternatives that I looked at, and they were really good.
Are you sure you didn't break it?
No, I didn't break it. It was nothing to do with me.
Makes a change.
I mean, it wouldn't be unheard of, but no,
true.
It wasn't me. The first one that I looked at, and it's a bargain, really, is Screenshot PSD. Now, you tried that one?
No, but I think I might have it. Can't remember.
He said looking for it. Yeah, it's available from the Mac App Store. And
I've got
what
it installed.
What it does is save a screenshot to a PSD, so a Photoshop file. And why that's different than taking a standard screenshot is that all the elements of that screenshot are on independent layers. So if you think that, you know, you've taken a screenshot and then you realise that there's something on your desktop or there's something in your menu bar and you need to tidy it up. I mean, I'm thinking about you at work. You've got to really sanitise screenshots, haven't you?
Mm. Yeah.
This thing would make it really easy because you just open it in Photoshop and then turn the layer off. Now, you might think, ah, yes, but that makes it expensive because then I'd need Photoshop. But don't forget the Pixelmator can open Photoshop files, so you could do it in there if you needed to. So that one is only $1.99. I mean, you can't be robbed for $1.99 for it. I don't think it excels at taking a lot of screenshots. That's really for a situation where you either do need to tidy them up, you want to edit them in some kind of way, or you're just taking the odd one to use maybe in a manual or something like that where you need top-notch quality. Something similar, and I'm sure I mentioned this many moons ago, but back in the day, it was probably ludicrously expensive. It's no longer the most expensive, but it does a very similar job to that one, and it's called Layers. And again, it saves to a Photoshop file. But I had a look at it. I did have it installed, but I updated it to the very latest version, and it seems to have now a new feature in it where, although it is a Photoshop file and it is in Layers, you don't need to take it into Photoshop to edit it. It's got this kind of interface where you can turn elements on and off within its own interface. So I think both of those, to be honest, are probably too much for a simple screenshot. Don't you think?
Yeah, I think you're right.
So then I moved on. I already owned a copy of Snagit from TechSmith, but I was in the Sketch mindset at the time, and I tried it. Do you remember that thing, that red thing that used to pop out from the side, on the right-hand side of your screen? Like, oh, a bit like Jing.
Vaguely.
It was like a red button, and it was one of those things, I think it was around the time that Windows XP... The Fisher-Price interface. This thing hung on the side of your screen, and when you moved your mouse pointer over to it, it popped out and it gave you a button to take a screen cap. And I looked at it and thought, no, I can't be doing with anything like that. I don't want any interface on the screen, because by definition, then when I take a screenshot, I've got that sat there, haven't I? And I don't want to see it. And I already had an absolute boatload of other alternatives, so I pretty much binned Snagit at that point. But once Sketch had disappeared, I was checking everything I owned to see where we were up to with them, and was one of them head and shoulders above the others now? And I revisited Snagit. Wow, it's completely awesome. Now, be warned, I'll start with this, it's not cheap. It's a professional app, and the price reflects that. It's £34.99, and that's pounds.
I think we must have got a discount.
We being the corporate, not we being you and me. Well, it was on, I remember, it was available for sale at half price in the Mac App Store, because it is available from the App Store as well. Now, there is a big distinction between the direct version and the App Store version. All TechSmith software is activated. So if you buy it direct, it's activated and there's a 2-machine limit. Via the App Store, obviously, you can install it as many times as you like on as many Macs as you've got, but you have to wait longer for updates. So the usual story with the App Store. But yes, it was around half price, so about $17.50. And of course, with Derek and his wonderful, there are iTunes vouchers on offer news. I probably got another 25 to 30% off that as well. So for me, it was worth it, but I appreciate it. It's not cheap.
Mind you, I was talking about the Windows version, not the Mac version.
Is the Windows version even more expensive?
We paid $28, but ooh, as I said, bad. We probably got a corporate discount. I use Sketch a bit on the Mac, but to be honest, for a basic screenshot, Command-Shift and 4 will do, and then Preview to put your annotations on.
Oh no, I don't like the annotations in Preview. Plus the fact Preview does its own thing, because it's got that auto-save thing going on. You can actually end up with a screenshot that's 500k, which doesn't sound a lot, but it does if you put it on Twitter, and it only needs to be 10k.
True, but...
You hadn't thought of that, had you?
No, I hadn't. But compared to Windows, you know, Command-Shift-4 and Preview is actually... I was going to say something, but I won't. Also, the bee's knees.
I know what you were going to say. Yes, because the stuff on Windows, I mean, you always could take a screenshot, but...
Well, print screen's a waste of time, and we've been through this before, the snipping tool crashes, so that's an even bigger waste of time.
When I left Windows, it was a case of taking a screenshot and taking it into Windows Paint.
Na, na, na,
yes, exactly. Na, na, it was a long time ago.
When I were a lass.
Yes. Mm. I'm glad you didn't say lad. That would have kicked you off.
Snagit actually is something that I can't live without on Windows. I use it every day for taking screenshots. I create a lot of quick reference guides and user documentation in my work. So I actually persuaded my boss to buy it for the team. You know, I put together a a full-page memo.
Oh, not one of those. I used to have to do that every time I wanted something.
Yeah, well, that's exactly what I had to do. And I thought...
Couldn't do the day job for writing memos about why I should have something. It was like writing to Santa.
That's exactly what I was doing, you know. Trying to persuade my boss's boss to shell out, you know, like 100 quid for five of us to have it on the team. And I thought, you know, 100 quid and I'm spending an hour writing this. But anyway, we got it in the end. I think that I'm actually the only one that uses its features. Maybe some of the others actually use it, but just for taking the screenshots. Things like the cutout feature, which I find is absolutely awesome, and I use it regularly. And if you've not come across the cutout feature, what it allows you to do is it's kind of like crop, but from the middle. So the crop feature on you know, things like Photoshop or Pixelmate or anything, Word even, Word and PowerPoint let you crop images, but they crop from the edges or from the corners, whereas this actually allows you to cut something out from the middle. So, you know, I'll give you an example. I was taking a screenshot from my own Mac of my Chrome screen, because I wanted to show something in a browser, and you pointed out that I ought to remove the toolbar, not the toolbar, the bookmarks bar, because it had my own personal bookmarks on there. So rather than actually cutting it into two and restitching it, I just used the cutout feature to cut out that particular portion of the screen. So it works horizontally, it works vertically, and it has this, how do you describe it, tooth marks?
Do you mean the jagged edges?
That's the one, yeah. I thought they were called tooth marks. But
I never use the one with the jagged edges. It makes it look like the screenshot, like it's been taken from a newspaper and you've ripped it out. So
yeah.
Like torn edges.
That's
is the
it,
effect.
Yeah. I use it occasionally just to indicate that something's missing.
That's what it's best used for, yeah. So if you've taken a dialogue box and you're only focusing on the top left-hand corner of the dialogue box, you don't want the rest of the dialogue box there. So think about Excel. You take screenshots of Excel and there's lots of white space, isn't there, on the right?
Yeah.
So you could use this feature to crop from the right and then it has this torn edge effect. So it's obvious that the person looking at it isn't looking at all of it. But no, I use the other feature more, the one that you were talking about, where I've got something and there's like a white bit in the middle and I don't need it. I only want them to look at the top and the bottom. And I want to take out a chunk in the middle. And it allows you to do that. You make a selection of it and then you use the cutout key. But not only does it remove it, because like you say, any image app would remove it. It removes it, but it closes the gap.
Yeah.
Now, you could do it by hand, but it's very fiddly, isn't it?
Yeah.
So for that feature alone, you're right. I've never seen anything else that does that.
The annotations are great. And also the scrolling to capture the entire screen, because there's times where I want to take, say, a full screenshot of a full browser screen, Well, it's not a full browser screen, it's a full browser page where some of it's off screen.
A web page, dear.
A web page, yes.
Yes, that's what you mean,
yes,
isn't it?
A full web page and some of it's off
screen. 3 days in and you're cracking up.
Yeah.
Can't wait for day seven.
Of course, if you use normal print screen tools, it will only take what's on the screen. So this will actually take the whole web page, the whole window, even if it's off the screen. I've stopped prattling now.
Good. So you're using it now on a Mac, are you?
I have started using it on a Mac when I remember.
What on earth's that?
A car alarm.
Is that Siri trying to keep us awake?
No, it's a car alarm. Should we carry on?
Well, we could stop and leave it, but we're going to have to carry on or Mac Bytes 7 will become Mac Bytes 47
we'll
at this
on.
Rate.
Yeah, I have started using it on the Mac, as I say, when I remember. The Command Shift 4 is usually what I use. But if I want to do something specific, then I will use Snagit or save it and take it into Snagit and use the editing features.
Well, as ever, I use a whole range of apps. Snagit's the best, but there are a few alternatives, and Monosnap is great. It's very similar to Sketch in concept, even to the fact, you know that little tag you used to have at the bottom of Sketch and you could drag and drop stuff to the desktop?
Yeah.
Or anywhere else, to be honest. Monosnap's got that. So what makes Monosnap fantastic is it's got all the features that Sketch used to have, and more besides. And it's free. It's cross-platform as well. It has the option in the preferences to post to many online services. So they fall into two categories. The free ones include your own FTP server, SFTP, WebDAV and Amazon S3. And of course, you can get free space on Amazon S3. And then there's a whole other category of services that you can upload to. So Evernote, Dropbox, Yandex Disk, Box and Cloud App. To get access to those, it's a one-off payment of $2.99, which I think is a complete bargain, to be honest. It would give you, because Snagit does upload to services, but it does it in a very odd way. And it's quite difficult in Snagit to convert, you know, to say, I want this one as PNG, but I want that one as a JPEG. And that it was always a lot easier in Skitch, and it is easy in Monosnap. So I think the $2.99 is worth it. You can get a Monosnap cloud account as well, and that saves your snaps in the cloud. And as I say, it's got all those annotations. One of the things I've seen in Monosnap that I've never seen in anything else, with one possible exception, but it's slightly different, is there is a sneaky tip. When you've taken your screen cap, you know how you want to highlight something, so you draw around it and you get like a border, usually red with a drop shadow on it? Well, if you hold the Option key down as you're doing that, it draws the circle on it okay, or the square or whatever, but it zooms the area that you've drawn over. It's an unusual effect, but really valuable, I think. I have seen the option in something else, which I'll talk about shortly, but I did it inadvertently. I was just obviously thinking I was in the wrong gap. MacBite 7, head's not where it should be. Held down the wrong key, and as I drew, I thought, whoa, what's it done? And then I realised it's this sneaky option where you can zoom an area, so to really focus on it. You've seen me do that, but I do it manually. You know when I do a presentation?
Yeah.
And I'm trying to highlight something on a slide? I take two screen caps. I take the first one, and then I take another one zoomed in, and I put one over the top and like draw around it. This thing does it automatically. You've seen that?
I haven't.
Have you got it installed?
Good question. Shall I try it?
Why is the answer always I'll go and have a look? Not yes, of course I have.
Well, I don't know what I've got installed.
Oh no, because the elves and the shoemaker work at night, don't they? And install all sorts on your machine.
Right, it's
running. There. Have you tried it then? Go and try it. Go and try it.
Right. What do I do? Oh, that must be new.
What is?
Make selfie.
Oh, good grief. Yes, it does that as well. But I mean, there are no photographs of me. I don't do that kind of thing. That's you won't like find a photograph of me.
Right, so what do I press?
Have you taken a selfie then? Is that what you're doing? Oh, we're going to have to put this in the show notes if you do. Just take a screenshot with the thing. And then you draw around it with the tool to highlight it. But instead of just putting a circle on it, it zooms in as well.
Right. Okay, I've taken a screenshot.
Oh, this is like slow motion.
Right, and then hold down the Option key.
Yes. Yeah, have you selected the tool? The one
the
to draw around
tool.
It?
Yeah.
Isn't this agonising? Yes, right, so hold the Option key down.
Oh, I see.
Ah, light's dawned.
And there's me facing close up.
Oh, dear, you did take a selfie.
Oh. Hey, that's like at the match when they zoom into a person.
Oh,
right, I'll
grief.
Have to save that.
Fan of the week.
Fan of the week, yeah. Mug of the week,
right.
In my case.
So that was a really good tip. Hold the Option keys down. It zooms, it's better. But I know you wanted to try that at work before Snagit, and it didn't end well,
no,
did it?
No, it didn't.
Go on. Usual, was it?
God, I look like I've got a massive head on a small body. You'll have to see this later.
Save it for me. It'll be something for me to look forward to.
Yeah, I'll delete it after, though. It's not going in the show notes.
I'll see what I can do, and so will Siri.
Really?
So, Windows. You tried it on Windows, or did you?
I tried it on Windows. Yes, I did try it on Windows.
I thought you didn't get that far.
I tried to install it because it was free, and it crashed.
You see, it was that was because you added the because it was free. Oh, what does work at work? I'm assuming that was your work
Word
machine.
And Excel.
But you're forced to use those. So it's because it's locked down, not because there's something wrong with it?
Probably, yeah. It's probably didn't have the right version of whatever on it.
You did not stand on one leg with a sacrificial chicken and wave it?
It was probably a 0.00001 version of the Windows service pack that was missing.
Yeah, as ever. Well, let's move on. Another favourite of mine, a bit quirky, is something called Napkin, which is very different from a simple screenshot utility, but useful in certain circumstances. It has a napkin background, so it's as if you're going to draw on a napkin, or you can draw, or you can bring screenshots into it and put arrows and circles and the usual kind of stuff on it. The focus is heavily on the annotations, but the canvas allows annotations outside the original capture. So if you think about what you've just done in Monosnap, when you've got that circle and you've highlighted it, you've got that zoom bit, if you drag it off the edge of the image, it disappears, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So that you've only got the square area of the image. Well, what Napkin does that's very different is it gives you a huge canvas outside of the image. So if you want to draw, and you can draw a zoom mode on it. There is a zoom mode. So, you know, you draw a zoom element on it and you drag it away. As you drag it away, it has where you leave it, and it has like a tag on the other end. And as you move the tag at the other end, then what appears in the zoom is dictated by where you leave the tag. So you've got live editing of that zoom mode. And I like to drag them outside of the image, and then I can put explanation text on the canvas. If you think about how Sketch and Monosnap work, very different. And you only have the area of the image. Now you can extend that and various things, but Napkin just makes it easy. So it has text, it has this zoom mode, it has arrows. Another thing I've never seen anywhere else is measurements. So if you've taken a screenshot of a website maybe, and you want to say, I want this wider. If you draw a line across it and you set this to be a specific line, so there's different types of lines. One is called red line. If you set it to red line, it puts a measurement on it and it will actually live measure it. So you don't have to sit there and work out that this image is 280 pixels and you want it 300. As you draw the line, it will measure it for you. It also has redaction. So you can double click on an image and just draw across elements that you want to be redacted and then come out of redaction mode. That works brilliantly. And there's great sharing as well. Thing with it is another one of those professional tools. So it's way beyond what you would actually need if you take like one screenshot every month. But if you're working with screenshots, which I am, you are, then it's worth it, but it's $27.99 from the App Store. And I'm not actually sure if there is a trial. Could there be a trial? Check that out for me. Is there a trial at Napkin? It's aged and something, the site. You'll find it. Napkin app.
I'll just put Napkin Mac. I'll find
that's it. The one.
Aged and distilled. Sounds like me.
If you say so.
Download on the Mac App Store, so I doubt it.
Right, so if there isn't a trial, then if you'd bought it and you looked at it, you'd think, this doesn't do much, but it's one of those apps. It does, and what it does is very different than what other apps in the same genre do. But it's one of those apps that once you start working with it, you really appreciate it.
So, you're still using Sketch?
I do still have it installed, because one, it's got much better since Evernote did annihilate half the features, but it integrates so well with Evernote, and I do still use Evernote. So yes, I've got it installed. It's just that I don't want to put all my eggs in the Evernote Sketch basket anymore, because they've bought it and they want it to enhance the Evernote experience. And if that means losing other features, then I would suspect that they would just lose them. And that might be a feature that I rely on. So they're going to change that to suit the demands of their business, and that might not be what's best for me. So I just don't rely on it. I'd say Snagit's my primary tool. Like you're saying, that cutout feature is... I remember looking at it thinking, I'm never going to use this. And then once it was there, I thought, wow, this is cool.
Yeah, it's the one I use most of the time.
One of those situations. So Snagit primarily, but I'm using Napkin more as well, because I like the finished result. The finished result from Napkin is much better if I'm going to take it into a keynote or a PowerPoint presentation, because I can do most of the work outside of it and just take the finished product in. Because if I don't do that, if I take the raw materials in to Keynote and then start annotating it, I may have problems translating that into PowerPoint later. So if it's all in Napkin, it doesn't matter whether it's going into PowerPoint or Keynote or Pages, or it doesn't matter. You get the same result. So that's why that is there and what I use it for.
And related to screen capture, another app that you used, but me not so much, which was ScreenFloat.
Yes, it was a quirky thing. It took a screenshot and floated it above all the other windows on your desktop, which sounds completely and utterly superfluous.
That's what I thought.
Yes, but it's really useful. If you think about you want to refer to a dialogue or a window that closes if it doesn't have the focus. So imagine that you're writing training materials and you want to refer to, say, a print dialogue. And you open the print dialogue and you look at it. You can't then carry on typing with that print dialogue open. So you close it and you carry on. And then you realise you need to refer to it again. And you're in and out, in and out. For those situations, it's fantastic. So windows without focus, and also for viewing settings. So taking screenshots of settings, having them to one side and then going into an app and using those settings. It wasn't expensive. It was $4.99. The problem was, like many others, it got struck down by Mavericks. It was working after a fashion, and I opened it up, started working with it, and that was fine. And then I'm looking to close it, and there was no interface. So the little screenshots I'd taken were there, and I think it was in the menu bar as well, but there was no other interface to it. So to close it, I had to go into Activity Monitor. So because I don't use it every waking second of every day, I managed for a few weeks, and then I thought, this is still doing it and there's no update. And that was when I started looking for an alternative, not really expecting to find one, because like you're saying, it's too quirky, isn't it? And minority interest. But I did find one. I found one called Snappy App, which has exactly the same function. And as I tested it out, I thought, if anything, it's got a better implementation than ScreenFloat. And that's because with a ScreenFloat screenshot, it sits on your desktop, and when you move your mouse pointer over it, you get two interface elements appear. Across to close the image, because it is just an image floating at the top of your display, and it has a cog in the top right-hand corner. Now, Snappy App doesn't do that. There is no indication that the display is actually a screenshot. So if you can imagine taking a screenshot of, say, Skype, and you have it sitting on your desktop, and in fact, you could do this. You could play havoc with users' minds. Mm. You leave it sat there. There's no indication that it isn't an app until you try clicking on it and you're thinking, what's wrong with this? Oh, good grief, it's crashed. It's not responding. It's a screenshot. To close it, because there is no interface to close it, you double click it, which would probably take you about 3 hours of working out why you think this thing has crashed to realise it's not. It's a screenshot. But I like that. I like the fact that it didn't have those interface elements because, and I know this is very meta, but bear with me. It means if I'm working with it and I think, okay, I'm sorted with that, I can just close it. But another alternative is if I've taken a screenshot to refer to something and I've made changes, and then I realise I'd like to keep that or add it into something else, maybe napkin, I can actually take a screenshot of the screenshot. That is meta, isn't it?
It is.
Mm. But it works. It works brilliantly. You can't tell the difference. So a handy one to play tricks with. And the good news is that was free. So I thought, well, $4.99, and the alternative is completely free and had features, to be honest, that the paid one didn't. So I was impressed with that. But ScreenFloat is now back to its pre-Mavericks glory. And I found an extra and very useful feature in it, which is when you've taken a screenshot. So one of my real live use cases for this, just to prove that I'm not just collecting software for the sake of it. Not that you'd ever think that, would you?
No.
Mm.
Yes.
Yes. No, really, this has a use. When I'm editing the show in Logic, I go through, and as I'm marking off, this is backbytes, this is chat bytes, this is the wrap-up, I'm saving that to the markers section, and I use that to create the enhanced podcast. And it has timings in it, but they are locked in Logic, and Logic will not export them in a way that's any use to me. So what I do is I take a screenshot of that, and then I can close Logic down. And when I'm taking it to where I add my chapter markers, I've got this to refer to. The only thing is, it's very tiny. It's very tiny in Logic. And what I do with it, which I can now do with ScreenFloat, inadvertently found this, hovering over the edge of one of these screenshots, if you click and drag, it will resize it and it will make it much bigger, which is a nice feature. So I was going to say I think Snappy App is better, but now ScreenFloat's got that feature. Can't choose between them. Spoilt for choice, as usual.
Yeah, as usual, I wouldn't expect anything less, to be honest.
Thank you. Anyway, on to some retired hardware. I know, you're shocked, aren't you? I guess semi-retired would be more accurate, but what could I possibly be referring to? Well, it's my Apple Wireless keyboard. I loved my original Apple White keyboard, but it was a swine to keep clean. You could carbon date the crumbs that were visible in the base. Used to drive me mad, couldn't get them out either. When they brought in that flat style, you know, the slimline one, I think it was 2007, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I was dubious when I looked at it. But after I tried one during a one-to-one session, broke down and bought one. That was the one, it was wired and it had the numeric keypad. But it didn't take them long to get rid of that, did it?
No, I've still got that one down the side of my desk.
Oh, I've still got one as well. And I remember when I went in to get a Mac and they were shipping them with, at the time, the smaller keyboard, but wired. And I said, no, I want the one with the numeric keypad. And apparently, in a retail store, they can't do that. So they had to sell it to me for a silly price.
Oh, that's right, I remember
yes,
that.
Because I did want the one with the numeric keypad. I created shortcuts and all sorts of stuff like that. But there was an upside to them downsizing it, which was no cable. So I did end up with a standard wireless keyboard. So why did I change? You're wondering, aren't you?
I am.
Too many mistakes, and particularly missing letters when I was typing.
Are you sure that wasn't you?
No! Self-righteously indignant now.
Domestic. Domestic.
So, I researched into the options, and I decided to try a Matias Tactile Pro, which, for the uninitiated, is based on the design of the Apple Extended Keyboard from way back. Not a cheap option. It was £120 plus delivery. But I bit the bullet. It arrived the next day. Initial impression. It was huge. You must do the size comparison, mustn't you? Must do the size comparison.
Must you?
It was also heavy.
I said, must you?
Yes. It was also very heavy, and if I'm honest, it sounds like a herd of rampaging buffalo when I'm typing. But the only downside for me is the cable. I can cope with everything else, but I would prefer to lose the cable. The reason that it's cabled is to make sure that you don't have that problem with the keys. I think it's known as ghosting, where you're trying to type and you're either not getting the keys you're expecting, or there's like odd ones missing. Well, that's why it's cabled.
Or you just can't type.
I'm going to ignore you. So as I'm saying, the cable, it's 1.8 metres, which is a lot to lose. I've got a desk with no cutout. You know those cutout options where you feed things down the hole? My desk is quite long in the tooth now, but I love it and I don't want to swap it. So I don't have one of those. So I'd have to take it like under the front of the Mac and stuff. So not really an option to lose it in a nice way. So what I've done with it is I've tied it into a coil. And it hides perfectly underneath the keyboard because it's got solid legs that raise the keyboard, so slope it slightly forward. So it's the perfect level and position for typing. And what's left of the cable, which is only about maybe 12 to 18 inches, I've got connected to the Mac via that USB 2 hub. Do you remember the hub I was going crazy for?
I remember the hub you were going crazy for.
The little pretty one. And the lovely Jenna organised it for me. And It got here eventually, and it's gorgeous. Well, that I have sat at the front, so I just have it popped into that. It does feel great, and there's no batteries. I don't know about you, but the batteries always go at the most inopportune moments on all my battery devices.
Yes, my batteries are low right now, but they should last till the end of the episode.
I'm not going to say anything about that. So, as I'm saying, no batteries. And it's also got three USB slots, which is quite handy, one on either side and one at the back. So very handy for pen drives. Although, to be honest, because I've got this lovely hub, I don't really tend to use that.
Actually, that's what I miss about this keyboard. I've just thought about that.
So you do miss that?
The USB slots, yeah.
What did you put in them?
USB devices.
Oh, state the obvious.
No.
Yes, pen drives, big drives.
I'll tell you what I put in. The receiver thing for my Logitech mouse.
Oh, yes, I had that in mine. Because they used to be slightly recessed, didn't they, on the wired one. Yeah, I don't use them for pen drives because I've got this little one. But I think if I didn't have the little one, I would probably miss it for pen drives. But yes, this has got three anyway, but I don't tend to use it. Obviously, it's got the numeric keypad. And it's also got dedicated function keys, so you don't have to hold down that function key in the lower left-hand corner, which drives me mad.
I've got used to that now.
It's an extra key.
But it is an extra key and an extra finger, isn't it?
No, I was never overly keen on that. Probably just because of the way I work. I've seen no more lost letters, so still a few typos, but nothing actually missing, which was what was happening to me. I've actually had this quite a while. Don't know why I've not talked about it before. I've had it 18 months and it looks like new. I find the Apple keyboards, and I must have had quite a few of those, they suffer from shiny key syndrome. Are yours shiny?
No, they're a bit grubby, actually.
No, you know what I mean? Not, and it's not dirt. It's like when you clean it, instead of it, your fingers kind of slip on it because you've worn it down to smooth. Whereas when you buy a keyboard, it's actually got quite a texture on it. And no amount of cleaning cures it.
Right, well, what do you know about cleaning?
Tech cleaning, not household cleaning. Completely different beast.
Is there a difference?
Yes.
Is it? Oh.
Anyway, I doubt it's completely immune to shiny key syndrome, but I suspect it's going to take a lot longer to show evidence of it than the Apple one. And luckily, the leg hasn't fallen off, like that stupid strip of plastic that passes for a leg on the Apple wireless keyboard, of which I think I've lost about four. You've never lost one, have you?
No. I obviously don't use it enough.
Yeah, it must be the way I type. Yeah, well, I've lost too many of them anyway. I guess if you're looking at the downside, the price, but there again, you'd pay almost as much for a less sturdy Bluetooth option. And the weight for me is an advantage because I don't really need the keyboard wandering all over the desk as I work. And as for the noise, well, it soon becomes the norm. And that's from someone who doesn't like noise of any description. Can't say you agree, though.
No, I think you were right, Rampaging Buffalo.
Well, it's sure sturdy. It's like something out of War Games, isn't it? It's a fantastic typing experience.
Come clean a webinars?
Oh, yes. Well, if I were to use this in a webinar, I doubt you'd hear anything else. So what I tend to do in a webinar is unplug it and lovingly lay it down on the other desk and either return to the Apple Wireless or a Logitech Easy Switch keyboard, which is rather newly acquired and an awesome alternative to the Apple Wireless keyboard. Awesome because I think it's the keyboard Apple should have made. It's backlit. You ever notice that when you're using it in here? Where I am with it now.
I was going to say, is that thing in there?
Yes, and it's backlit. So it works more like a laptop. I think people are used to the black keys as well. It doesn't show the dirt like the other one. So it's backlit. And the other benefit is it's got three Bluetooth options. So you can have it connected to three devices at the same time and switch between them at the press of a button. So I've got it connected to my iPad, my iPhone and my Mac. And I just find that more useful than I thought I would. I have been forced to work more mobile than I prefer to work, and I ended up trying to type something up on my iPhone. And luckily I had this keyboard with me, and I thought, I'll try it. And it was really usable. It was a tiny screen, obviously, but it was really usable. So major benefit for me, of course, is that it's silent, which is critical for webinars and even more so for recording training videos. And although you don't tend to type too much in a training video, you are using shortcut keys all the time. And I think if I was using my other keyboard, you'd certainly know, wouldn't you?
Yeah, definitely.
So with this Logitech, there's no batteries to charge either because there's no batteries in it. It's actually thinner than a battery would be. So there will be nowhere for batteries to go. It has an internal battery and you can use it while it's charging. So it's just a matter of plugging it in like a USB device and it would charge. It's incredibly light and because of that, it's incredibly portable. The only weirdness I've found, and that could be because my other keyboard is this Matias Pro. When you put a keyboard in, a new keyboard, Maverick seems to ask you to press the key one to the right of the shift key on the left-hand side of the keyboard. I'll say that again slowly for you, Mike. Left-hand side of the keyboard, shift key. What's the key next to it, one to the right of that shift key?
The tilde.
Yes, well, that's what I've got on both of my keyboards. But when I attach this Easy Switch keyboard, it's convinced that it's the section key, and it makes the section key, which is in the top left-hand corner, just under the escape, the tilde key. which drives me completely insane. Most people wouldn't even notice. But my section key I use as like as a prefix key to a lot of my shortcuts. So if I'm typing, if I wanted to type my name, I'll use section key EG and then it will expand it. And of course, if it's in the wrong place, it's doing weird stuff. So that drives me insane. But a reboot fixes it. So it's not that it's broken. It's just doing its own thing, I guess. So that was the only thing that I found with it. So of those two options, I think both of them are much better than the Apple keyboard. The Matias Pro is about £120 and the Easy Switch is £87, which is all its money, but it's like having three keyboards. And of course, needless to say, you use neither, do you?
I use neither. I used to use the big keyboard that came with my iMac, like you said before, but I found that the cord got in the way. I then went to that big Apple keyboard, the flat one with the USB thing that I've forgotten about, but you reminded me before.
And now you're going to miss it, whereas you weren't missing it before. Oh, my duty's done there.
Can I hear some chunnering in my ear?
No. No.
Why don't you say it a bit louder?
No, you're fine. Carry on.
I missed what you said.
No, it's fine.
I also miss the home and end keys. So when I do an Excel webinar, I tend to go back to the wired one.
Is there no way to get home and end where you use the function key as well?
There probably is, but you know, I forget what they are.
I'm not sure that would work in a VM.
No, it probably wouldn't.
It might work on the Mac, but it might not work in a VM because the keys switch over for a VM, don't they?
I think they do.
Sometimes you can use Command and C and Command and V inside a Windows VM, and other times you've got to use the Control key. So it would probably get very confused.
It does. It confuses me. The one I'm using at the moment is the Apple Wireless one, the smaller Apple Wireless one, which I think is about £60, isn't it?
Yeah, £60-65.
I could have three of those whilst you're having those two.
Well, you could, and you'd probably need them the way the legs drop off.
Yeah, but it's not like my work one, because my work one is full of crumbs and muck, and you know, you turn them upside down and you bang them on the desk and lots of stuff comes out.
Can you imagine what would happen at Matt Byte's headquarters if you were to turn up any piece of tech on the desk and thump it?
Yeah, you'd go ballistic.
Right. Well, that seems a good note to end this episode on. So that's it for this special episode of Mac Bytes. Third part of our Mac Bytes 7 series. 7 Mac Bytes in 7 days. We're trusting no one is delinquent yet.
Yeah, I've heard them all.
Well, I know you have. Do you know, I wonder if we'll ever get this show out because that helicopter's back again.
I was just thinking that. Still looking for our defence.
Yes, I think so. We should let them know when we're recording this. Mm. After another drubbing, which doesn't limit it really, does it?
No.
I should explain that, shouldn't I? Manchester United dropping, got beat again.
It's all right, Harry knows.
There is a helicopter buzzing around outside, apparently looking for United's defence. So if you hear that, that's what it is, and that's what they're doing. Anyway, as always, we would love to hear from you. Send your questions, comments, queries by email to macbytesuk@gmail.com. You can use the contact form on the website or send us an audio file. Check out the show notes at macbytes.co.uk and keep sending in your Mac Love Bytes. We are collecting them. We're getting a good selection, and we'll be bringing Mac Love Bytes back very soon. You could leave a review on iTunes. We would really appreciate that. We could read them out as well.
Yeah.
I'd like that.
Yeah,
be good,
good
though.
Idea.
You could like us on Facebook and circle with us on Google+. Sign up for the newsletter, also at macbytes.co.uk. And you can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/macbytes. You can follow me personally on Twitter at twitter.com/ElaineGiles.
You can follow me at twitter.com/ThomasMike.
And you can follow me at twitter.com/MacBytesSiri.
So until next time, this has been Elaine and Mike bringing you MacBytes.
Goodbye.
Goodbye and see you next time.
3 days into the great MacBytes 7 and they're holding up well.
It's me that's keeping them going, you know.
Of course it is.